The following is a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
Welcome to Cartoon Fun. It's Cartoonerific. Yeah!
Well, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays to all of you out there. This is the Cartoonerific Classic Animated Cartoon Podcast. My name is Brian Mitchell, and I am the host. You know, I am a 60s kid. I grew up during the 1960s, and I was bombarded with all these television specials around the holidays. I can remember when Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol came on, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, the Grinch. I mean, and there were a lot of specials. Some have not stood the test of time. Some have kind of faded away. But Charlie Brown Christmas, the Grinch have stayed around. And pretty much most of those Rankin Bass specials. Now, we've talked about Rankin Bass in the past. We've had on Rick Goldschmidt to talk about the Halloween stuff, which is basically Mad Monster Party and maybe one more special. But we talked about the Rankin Bass specials from over the years and their movies and stuff like that and a podcast earlier on. But wanted to do a podcast about just the holiday Christmas specials that they did for CBS, ABC, and NBC back in the day. Their first special was, of course, Rudolph. They went on to do many others like The Little Drummer Boy and Frosty the Snowman, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, a whole bunch of others. And they've kind of stood the test of time. They're still being shown, which is unbelievable to me because a lot of these things get dated after a while, but the Rankin Bass stuff seems to have a freshness to it, has some wonderful music. Well, anyway, we're going to be talking about those specials. We have on Rick Goldschmidt, and he'll be back after this. Don't go away. Should be a fun one.
Cartoonerific is the place to be to celebrate hand-drawn animated cartoons. The Cartoonerific podcast features interviews with the magic makers behind your favorite animated cartoons, with episodes uploaded every Friday. Or visit the Cartoonerific blog featuring articles about classic cartoon animation. At the Cartoonerific Gallery, view original animation art and memorabilia from your favorite animated films and TV shows. The company store features exclusive swag from the Cartoonerific universe. And coming soon, brand new world premiere cartoons on the Cartoonerific channel. It's all here. Join the fun at www.cartoonerific.com. That's cartoon, ERIFIC.com. It's Cartoonerific, saving the universe one funny cartoon at a time. And now it's time for our special Cartoonerific guest.
Now, like I said before, I have a real fondness for the Christmas specials that came out. I love The Grinch, which was Chuck Jones directed that. Everybody knows that. And Charlie Brown Christmas by Bill Melendez and Charles M. Schulz. Of course, Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol, which was not an MGM, but a UPA production, which was directed by Abe Levito. And there's a great book out on that, which is by Daryl Van Sitters. So if you can get a copy of that book, it's great. It has a lot of wonderful artwork. But today, we're going to be talking about the Rankin Bass Christmas specials. We're talking about pretty much all of them. And we're going to be focused on Rudolph and Frosty and Santa Claus Coming to Town. Those are the biggies. Those are the ones that we see every year. A Year Without a Santa Claus is another one. Little Drummer Boy, which is not as prominent, but it's there. Nestor is another one. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them that they did. So anyway, let's get right to it. Please welcome my special guest, the Rankin Bass expert, man who's written many books on the subject. including The Enchanted World of Rankin-Bass. He's written the book on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Frosty the Snowman. Here he is, Mr. Rick Goldschmidt. Merry Christmas, Rick. How you doing today?
Hey, good. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. So we're going to be talking about all the Rankin-Bass stuff. And you wrote the book about The Enchanted World of Rankin-Bass, which most of that stuff is the Christmas specials and the Christmas movies that they did. And of course, Rankin-Bass did a lot of different things. But Rudolph was the first. And right. And how'd they get into producing Rudolph? Because I know they had Pinocchio before that. They had the Pinocchio series and the wonderful, I guess, the Wizard of Oz. They did the Wonderful World of Oz, or what was the name of that?
Tales of the Wizard of Oz.
Oh,
and then they did Return to Oz for the General Electric Fantasy Hour in February of 1964. That was their first TV special.
Okay,
and.
Now, Rudolph was part of the General Electric Fantasy Hour, correct?
Right. That's how it all came about. Now, when they did Return to Oz, I think Arthur Rankin and Jules Bass and all involved probably thought that was going to be the big hit. Mm-hmm. Because with the Wizard of Oz was being shown yearly, I think on CBS at that time.
Uh-huh.
And this was really the first sequel to the Oz story.
Right.
So they thought that was going to be the big hit.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Romer, who was part of the, they actually gave him director's credit on Rudolph, even though he didn't direct Rudolph. He had a relationship, not only with, NBC and General Electric, but there was a guy named Willard Sailoff at General Electric,
mm-hmm.
who came out of Montgomery Ward's. So there were all these ties to that original book that came out by Robert L. May.
And that
told the
A little bit of history of that. That was basically in the 40s, correct?
Right,
it was
the department store.
Right. Did they commission somebody to write that, or how'd that come about?
He was an employee who mm-hmm. worked for Montgomery Ward, came up with this idea of the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and the book really took off. They offered it as a little giveaway thing, or a promotional thing for children, because all department stores brought kids to the to the store in the winter with some type of character. In Chicago, it was Uncle Mistletoe through Marshall Fields.
Okay.
In Montgomery Ward's, it was Rudolph. And eventually, the Rudolph novelty sort of wore off, and they gave Robert L. May the rights to that Rudolph character that he created. They gave him the rights.
Right. Wow.
And he was involved with the Rankin-Bass special, but of course, Romeo Muller, who wrote the screenplay, he added all kinds of characters. Almost Wizard of Oz like,
right?
With the Misfit Toys and King Moonracer and Yukon Cornelius and
right.
Hermie the Elf and all of them. So it really became much bigger than they had ever planned, or it was only supposed to air for 2 years on the General Electric Fantasy Hour, but I think this year is its 58th year. So it's a much bigger Rankin-Bass took something that was somewhat popular and made it an iconic part of Christmas.
From what I recall, because I remember having, as a little kid, a storybook by Little Golden Books.
Right.
And it came with a record. And mm-hmm. you would play the record, and it was basically a narration of the book. The book was very simple.
Right.
And it really, I mean, think you could listen to it in less than 5 minutes. You know, I think it's probably like a 3 minute story. So that, you know, kudos to Romeo Muller, who took this thing that could have been a disaster and, excuse me, and turned it into this wonderful special with high and low points, whatever. And he didn't clunk it up, you know, with unnecessary material. It works for 50 right. some odd minutes. And I mean, and when you finish watching that special, it's almost like you don't want it to end. You know, you're enjoying this journey throughout this whole thing, but it was all from the imagination, I would think, of Romeo Muller.
And here's the other interesting thing about the creation of the Rankin-Bass version of Rudolph. There was a young artist that Rankin-Bass kept in-house. His mm-hmm. name was Tony Peters, Anthony Peters.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, when I interviewed him for the Rudolph book and I interviewed him for my first book, he always felt like Arthur and Jules didn't really understand or appreciate him because he was always seen as that kid in the back room who's doing the art for them for advertising mostly. And then he designed the characters for Tales of the Wizard of Oz and the lettering and the style of the Return to Oz also.
Right.
So he was very instrumental in the early work of Rankin-Bass, including Willie McBean and His Magic Machine.
And His Magic Machine. Geez, that keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Yeah. That was that was filmed simultaneously with Rudolph.
Oh, wow.
So they used all the same voice actors. And Tony Peters, not only did he design it, but he actually wrote a lot of it, came up with the concept of this boy and this time machine, which is very similar to Sherman and Peabody.
Oh,
and okay. I think Rankin-Bass actually came up with that idea first.
Wow.
Because there was a trade ad for Willie McBean and His Magic Machine from 59 or 60, where they were trying to sell it as a series. And then somehow Jay Ward Studios had Sherman and Peabody around that same time. So,
right.
But anyway, getting back to Rudolph, Tony Peters left Rankin-Bass right before Rudolph. And they hired him back to design Rudolph. That was the last thing he did. They hired him back to design all of the Rudolph characters.
Wow.
And I found one of his drawings recently mm-hmm. of Santa Claus. And they were very true to his style. He was a simplistic artist out of UPA.
UPA, New York or Los Angeles?
I think in New York.
Yeah, because they set up a studio here.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say John Hubley was involved with it, but he may not have been, but I think they had.
He was.
He was.
And so was Don Duga.
Oh, okay.
Who worked for Rankin-Bass and we talked about before.
Right.
But Tony did some characters. He sent me a picture. I included it in my Rudolph book
mm-hmm.
of three Christmas carolers for GE, which was for commercials that I haven't found yet.
Right.
But the reason that the elves in Rudolph all have the bulbous looking nose is they were meant to look like light bulbs for the Rudolph. for the regular animated commercials that Tony did prior.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's something I didn't realize. I should have, but I didn't. Very interesting.
And if you ask me, that combination of Romeo Muller and Tony Peters is similar to the combination of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, who initially they didn't get the credit that they deserved, but eventually they did through lawsuits.
Right.
And then their estates got paid.
Right.
The same thing happened with Rudolph. These are the guys that created all of the characters, but Arthur Rankin told the companies that were involved with Rudolph very early on when I did my first book, you're letting the wrong people license these characters and issue products on these characters, because the Romeo Muller estate and the Tony Peters estate is the proper estates that really own all those characters.
Right.
At best, the Rudolph that the other people would own is that Max Fleischer version, the generic version of Rudolph that, like you mentioned, that storybook with the record.
Yes.
And the Viewmaster, and all of the things that came out all through the 40s and 50s and early 60s. That was all just a very generic version of Rudolph, where the only thing they talked about was that they wouldn't let him play reindeer games.
That's right.
And Romeo took that and created Sam the Snowman to tell the story, and you know, all the wonderful characters that we associate with Rudolph that have become part of our holiday.
That's right.
Christmas holiday.
That's right. Well, it's because of all those surrounding characters that kind of make you sympathetic for Rudolph.
Right. Right. And, exactly.
Yeah. Really interesting. They recorded all the voices for that. They didn't do it in New York. I think they went to Canada to record the voices, correct?
Right. Except for Burl Ives, who I believe was done in New York or California. I'm not sure exactly where he was. Probably New York.
Yeah.
And the music was recorded in England. And that's why at the time they were known as Videocraft International.
Yes.
They weren't really Rankin Bass Productions per se. Even in the credits of Rudolph, you see the Link TV logos for the Videocraft International.
Right.
They worked in all these different, the animation in Japan and the right. voice actors in Canada.
Yeah, it's like an international production, the way Rankin Bass did it, because it produced in so many different countries. The animation was done over in Japan. So who was supervising that? And it was the same people that basically working on the Pinocchio, correct?
Right, right. And Tad Moshinaga was the head animator. Eventually, during 66, he turned over the head animator job to Hiroshi Tabata. And then there were other animators that were the lead animators. And they never felt like they were up to the quality of Tad.
Right.
And that Rudolph was the pinnacle of what could be done with stop motion animagic. Some other people disagree, like they think the animation isn't smooth and it's herky jerky, but I think that's the charm of it. And the simplistic Tony Peters characters, I prefer those over the later animation from Rankin Bass. I just like the simplistic style. You know, it's almost like it's all the advertising from the 50s and 60s was very similar to that.
Yes. And I guess it was a holdover from that.
Right. But, it was.
But I think the thing is, you know, they look like, you know, later on, they're getting a little bit more sophisticated with the styling, I think. And so, you know, when you look at the Rudolph special, it's basically the backgrounds are stylized. You know,
right.
There's no attempt to really try to do realism. Santa's not a realistic guy, you know, and neither is Mom. You know, they're basically they're caricatures of people. They're not, I can't even say caricatures, they're stylized versions of people. And, you know, even with the reindeer, you know, the reindeer are very cute, but they're not real reindeer, you know. And I like the fact that there was really no attempt to try to bring it more toward a real thing, because I think it might have destroyed the charm of it.
Well, my degree is in illustration, and I'm a big collector of things. Mm-hmm. And what I collect for Christmas is the 50s and 60s decorations. Mm-hmm. And I think they captured that style in the trees, in the packages, in the elves, in the Santa, and everything.
Yes.
It has that 50s, 60s look that is so endearing to me.
Yeah.
That visually I'm attracted to that over the more realistic things that we've come to know in the later centuries.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy the nostalgic value to Rudolph more than anything.
Sure. The music is very 50s too, really. I mean, it's not, you know, it's funny because, you know, like Disney Company today, you know, whatever's trending now, they're going to like push it into a movie. And, and I don't think there was any attempt when they were doing that special to try to put, you know, because it came out, what, in 64, correct?
Right.
So, you know, the Beatles were hot at the time, you know. So, you know, you would, you know, if that was done today, there's no doubt in my mind, and I'm not saying Rankin Bass, but I'm just saying in general, if Rudolph was being done today, they'd find a way of getting some rock and roll in there, or
right.
or maybe God, what's the big thing today? I don't know.
House music or rap.
Yeah.
They even stuck some of that in the Elvis movie, I heard,
which
I didn't go to see, but they stuck that in there. And how does that relate to Elvis Presley's career? It doesn't.
It doesn't. I think it's I saw that movie, and it's I liked it, but it's kind of a fantasy in a way. You know, especially when you have Tom Hanks playing
Colonel Parker.
Colonel Parker. And boy, that's a real fantasy, I think.
Well, the Rudolph music, the interesting thing about that, Maury Laws told me this, that 2 years before Rudolph, he did jingles for GE.
Mm-hmm.
And they were long commercials, 2 minute commercials. He said that's a lot of music to write.
Mm-hmm.
For a jingle. And what he focused on in 62 was the Nutcracker. He said not to copy the Nutcracker, but to copy the style of the Nutcracker. And that's where he got the bounciness of his holiday music, with the accents on the on the bells and the glockenspiels and all of those things.
Right, right.
Came from that. So he took something that was classic and he added to it, and that's how the Rudolph music developed into being such the iconic music that it is. That overture at the beginning of the special, I think, might be my favorite Maury Laws orchestration.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah.
Right. Right. It's just an unbelievable quality he brought to the project. That was his first musical supervising credit.
Right. Wow. How long did it take them to produce Rudolph? Did it take?
In TV Guide, it said 18 months.
Right.
That could have been a generalization because, as we talked about before in our other interviews, that there was a time constraint. So if they had to get that on the air by December 6th, they had to do it no matter what. They probably finished it right before it aired. Some people bring up things like when they're in the dollhouse, Yukon, Hermie, and Rudolph, you can hear somebody talking like on the track. And that probably was a mistake that they left in because they had to, to get it on the air. Also, the fact that after they play We Are Santa's Elves, the foreman elf's voice is not Carl Banus. It's somebody else saying, whatever the lines were right after the song, he has a different voice.
Oh, yeah. He's got, oh, come on, everybody. We got to, it's different than the, I can't do the voice. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So they might have had to change it at the last second, in New York, and they couldn't get that actor from Canada to do it. So there were these things that they had to do on the fly to get that thing on the air by December 6th. So I would imagine it was more like a year or less.
Right. I could probably do that voice, but I got to think about it. I got to think about the voice. It's like, it's almost like a male version of Marjorie Maine.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about? She had this screechy voice and it was kind of like, raspy, and that was kind of the voice that they were doing for that character. And then all of a sudden it changes into almost, it sounds like the same guy doing Hermie, doing an impression. I don't know, but I know what you're talking about.
There's a lot of funny things like that in the history of the special that fans bring up. They want to know what's wrong with the misfit doll. That's always a question that from when I started this work all the way till now. And Arthur always made jokes about that. I think what really happened is they made a lot of changes in 65. And they.
Why was that?
Because Willard Sayloff, who was the GE. Person in charge, just decided he wanted to change. He wanted a different song, so they added "Fame and Fortune," and they had to reanimate that song section.
Right,
and then he wanted at the end of the special, instead of the elf throwing packages off, which we now have in color, we have a print of that in color that we're going to transfer soon and color correct.
Right.
But he decided we want to have Santa go back and pick up the toys. And then you see the girl doll by the campfire saying that Santa forgot about us and all of that.
Right.
And then they throw all the packages, all the toys off with umbrellas.
That's right.
It was just a Willard Sayloff decision, but that gave the Misfit Girl doll more airtime.
Right.
So she's around the campfire and you see her getting in the bag and going off the sleigh. Mm-hmm. And Romeo never wrote what was wrong with the girl in his script.
Right.
he didn't really give any kind of handicap to her. So a lot of people will say, oh, she's missing her nose, or, you know, this is why, that's why. They make things up. And Arthur just said she was clinically depressed. And there was no Prozac at the time. That was his joke about it.
Yeah. They haven't run the original special. Basically, it's still missing that piece, correct? But it's on the record album.
Right. They haven't reconstructed Rudolph properly since I've been doing this work, which has been over 30 years.
In fact, they keep trimming it, don't they? They haven't. The only place you could really see, like, the whole special, minus that first year section, is basically on Blu-ray, right?
Well, even the Blu-ray is not right and has a lot of issues. I've always wanted to reconstruct it properly, and I think it would do big business on the network, mm-hmm. on CBS,
right?
If they could say, hey, there's scenes in here now that haven't been seen since 1964, and we're just going to extend Rudolph into a 90-minute slot,
right?
And put the original ending and show you the other ending, and you know, have it completely uncut and all remastered. They're showing a print now that has sound warbles where the music is going,
you know,
mm-hmm. The animation they're showing during We're a Couple of Misfits is some of the animation from Fame and Fortune. And it's all choppy and edited and really poorly done, like it was done by a kindergarten grade school kid. Wow. So, It's really been treated very, very poorly in every facet that I can even talk about. The only good DVD release was the Golden Books,
mm-hmm.
a very, very first DVD release where it had the photo image that I got credit for. And Arthur Rankin did a introduction where they use my photographs during his introduction and everything.
Right.
It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the following year or 2 years later, Arthur asked him to send him a box of DVDs, and he got them. I was there when he got them New York.
Wow.
And they didn't say Rankin Bass on the front anymore. So he called him up and he said, take my introduction off of there. And ever since then, it's been really a shoddy release, really poorly done.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's probably the most beloved Christmas special ever.
Right.
And to give it such a poor treatment like that is absolutely ridiculous. Because they could do that, and they could sell a ton more Blu-rays or DVDs, or and they could expand it to 90 minutes, and it could have like a little bit of an introduction, you know?
Right.
They're
letting the wrong people tell them what to do.
And right.
I find that this happens with big companies,
mm-hmm.
that like Warner Brothers and Universal. They don't know anything about what they own. They don't know anything.
Right.
So you need to get the expert, in this case, it would be me.
Mm-hmm.
But they're listening to these other people that are telling them they're the experts.
Right.
And this is what you need to do. We need to do a 4D version of Rudolph on the computer and make it look like it's modern.
Brand new.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can.
Right. And who likes that, though? Not me.
Right.
Not the Rankin Bass fans.
Right.
The true Rankin Bass fans don't like that junk.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we want to see the history, and they don't want you to see the history, because then they would know that Romeo Muller and Tony Peters actually created the characters, not these other people.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's nutty. And Rudolph is like the Wizard of Oz. You have to treat it that way, and it's not been treated that way so far.
No. I mean, the Disney company, to their credit, they were restoring all these films. They made an effort to really go back and restore not just the animated film. Well, look, the animated films make them a ton of money, even, you know, on these re-releases on Disney Plus, you know.
Right.
But, you know, they've been restoring their entire legacy of films. And they had a gentleman there, and I want to say his last name was McQueen. I remember them restoring a film called Bedknobs and Broomsticks because it was shortened. It was normally, I think it was originally about 2 hours and 20 minutes long or 2 hours and 10 minutes long. And then it was shortened. Right. It shortened down to one hour and 30 minutes. And it took a ton of stuff out of it. And then they went back to put the stuff back in, and they found a lot of elements, but there were a lot of things that they didn't find. And I mean, I hope that all those pieces are still around where they could restore it. Is it there? I mean, is it available?
The Rudolph stuff?
Yeah, all that.
Yeah, definitely. We have the end credits in color. A friend of mine owns it, and we can get it transferred. Mm-hmm. We have the original GE commercials that I got with Arthur Rankin, the original Elf GE commercials,
right,
which should be part of the package.
Mm-hmm.
All of the elements are still around. They just haven't been handled properly to this point.
Right. I remember seeing that special when I was a little kid, and I remember all those commercials in between, which kind of extended the special, you know?
Right.
Because, they were selling product, but it was still the animation from the show. It was still the elves, you know?
And right.
Rankin Bass didn't do that, correct? That was done by a separate...
No, they did it.
Oh, they did it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I watch it that way every year. And when when I do my appearances, I put it on the TV. And that's the only way that I can watch it now is with those commercials.
Oh, wow. One day you're going to show it to me. Getting away from Rudolph was huge when it came out. It was basically the number one special that year. And it continued to be the number one special. Or the number one show of the year probably gets big ratings.
And ironically, it never got an Emmy or even nominated for an Emmy. They gave that to Charlie Brown, and the Grinch won a Grammy. But Rudolph and the Little Drummer Boy and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, all of those great classic Rankin Bass specials weren't even nominated for an Emmy.
That's crazy.
I know.
That's really crazy. Did Rankin Bass ever win like an Emmy I know they didn't win an Oscar, but
I think the only nomination they got was for the Little Drummer Boy book 2.
No.
And that didn't win. The Hobbit won a Peabody and a Christopher Award, but not an Emmy.
Wow. Yeah, you know, you think of some of the greatest films ever made, and they were just passed up. I don't think they won any, like, you know, I keep talking about Singing in the Rain, but there's other movies out there that, you know, great movies that just, you know.
Right.
They're classics today. Christmas Story, which was a Bob Clark movie, and it's a perennial. I mean, I think they're still running it on Christmas on TBS, like 24 hours. But yeah, it's just mind blowing to me how all these movies or TV shows, especially the Rankin Bass stuff. I told Maury Laws through an email that I thought some of the music he wrote over the years for the holiday specials is probably some of the finest songwriting for TV I've ever heard, and even in motion pictures. Some of those songs, you know, they have a double meaning to them, and they were just great tunes.
Maury, the way our friendship developed was really funny, because when I called him up at first, he was very, very guarded about his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like, who is this? What, you know, what do you, why do you care about this stuff? And then when he, when he realized that I was a musician, that, you know, Arthur and was working on things with me, and that I really did have a deep appreciation for his music and his writing.
Right.
Then he opened up and became very, very friendly with me. And we would meet in the city, downtown Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Whenever he visited his son. He had a young son, John, who, I think he was an accountant. So at the holidays, he would come in and meet John, and I would go and meet him for dinner and lunch and things.
Oh, wow.
And he was such a big part of all of this Rankin Bass stuff. But at first, he didn't really realize that it was going to have the lifespan that it has. He thought it was just kiddie stuff, and eventually people were going to get tired of it. But I think he realized how important it was towards the end of his life. And
well, the orchestrations he did for, he didn't write any of the music for Rudolph. That was all, I'm trying to think who that was.
Johnny Marks wrote it, but right. He orchestrated it all, and he had a big part in why that was so successful.
Yeah, people have heard the song Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by, I think, trying to think who made it popular. It was back in the 40s.
Gene Autry.
There you go. See, yeah. It's my old age. You know, I'm approaching 95 years old here, and at least my brain. And I can't pull up all the stuff the way I used to. But, maybe some of it. I don't know. But
he didn't want to record Rudolph either. His wife was the one that urged him to record it, and it became his biggest seller ever. And Johnny Marks, who wrote the song, he didn't want it to be turned into a television special initially.
Mm-hmm.
It was Arthur Rankin who kept on him about it, and eventually he gave in and was happy to write the rest of the songs, including Holly Jolly Christmas, which became a big hit for Burl Ives. So
yeah,
everyone was kind of apprehensive to get in on this, but
right,
look at what it's become. It's not only a TV special, it's like what people identify with Christmas.
Oh, yes.
It's Rudolph and their version of Santa and their version of all the other characters have become as much a part of Christmas as the wreath and the Christmas tree have.
I would have to say that and Frosty, but I think Rudolph definitely the number one. And
right.
And it definitely made an impression on me as a little kid, because I looked forward to that special every year. I still do. You know, I have the Blu-ray of it. I have several Blu-rays of that special, mm-hmm. along with other Rankin Bass material. And that's the one that keeps me coming back. And there's still a charm to it that feels as fresh today as it did in 1964 when I saw it as a little kid. And it's not just nostalgia, you know. It's there's just something really magical about it. It's one of those things when you have all the right people together making a show, and it's like lightning strikes, you know.
There you go. There you go. You That's know? Why I wrote a book about it. That was my second book. Mm-hmm. I had to do one about Rudolph because there's so much involved, and you still can't put your finger on why it's magical like that. And I think they use the right term, animagic,
mm-hmm.
because there's all you can tell. You could go to a production company today, like a Warner Brothers or Disney, and you could say, okay, here's the idea. Here's the music, here's everything, but you still can't come up with that magic unless you have the right team.
Exactly. That's right. And that's any project.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to equate this to Chuck Jones, because Chuck Jones had this wonderful team of people that he worked with at Warner Brothers, and they just, you know, they worked with each other every day, and they knew each other really well, and they knew what everybody wanted. And they all kind of strived to the same end, you know. They all did their right thing, but it was to make that one product. And that's why, you know, you look at one Chuck Jones cartoon from the period in the 1940s and then 1950s, and it's just like it's one piece of magic after another. Those things are incredible.
Right.
And they're all 6 minutes long. But the point is that it's almost like a music group. It's like, you know, there's a wonderful, we were saying, talking about Tom Hanks before, but I'm going to talk about That Thing You Do, which right. I think is a really wonderful movie.
Yeah.
And it's basically, it's about a group of, if you haven't seen it, it's four guys that kind of come, you know, they come together to form a band, and one guy is the drummer. He kind of like, he hurts himself and he can't drum, and they bring another guy in, and it's all of a sudden the group solidifies. It's like
right.
he was the guy that made them what they were, you know, but it was the sum of all those parts became greater than the sum, you know?
Right. And so, that's a really good Blu-ray too on that movie, because they added like 20 minutes of footage or something that they cut out in the initial release.
Yeah. To clean it up a bit, I guess. Does it work as a longer movie?
Oh yeah. I like it better.
Wow.
Yeah. There's some neat parts in there with the drummer and the girlfriend.
Right.
What was her name? The actress?
Liv Tyler.
No, the other one. The blonde.
Oh.
She became a big, huge star after that movie.
Yeah, there you go. There's the Alzheimer's setting in. It's Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot more with her in the extended version.
Right.
And she was kind of a self-centered person that was wrong for him.
Right. That's right. Well, I love that movie.
Yeah.
About as far from Rankin Bass as you're going to get. But, you know.
Well,
but
that ironically, there's a scene in that movie where the bass player is watching the TV set in the drummer's dad's store, and they're watching Fireball XL5.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Because Hanks was a fan of Gerry Anderson, and he's into space and all of that.
Right. So that was Thunderbirds, right?
Yeah. And that's very similar to Rankin Bass, in my opinion. I've always been a big Gerry Anderson fan for the same reason I am of Rankin Bass.
Right. I used to love that show when I was a kid. And right. I think it was, but it was actual puppets.
Right. Marionettes. But marionettes are similar to stop motion, you know, and they had eyes that moved and mouths that talked with the dialogue, and
right.
they mechanically maneuvered those. So it's similar.
It's similar. Yeah. And that was produced in England.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting. I got to look into that. I have to revisit that sometime in the future. So Rudolph is playing, I'm sure, is it on CBS this year?
Oh, yeah. And they're also showing
it now. They're clutching on to it. It was originally on NBC, wasn't it, Rudolph?
Yes.
And then they lost it.
It over in the mid-70s, I think.
Wow.
To CBS. And
because CBS wanted it, I guess they're paying paying for it. Because it still gets huge ratings.
Yes, it does.
So
that and Frosty and
yeah,
Santa Claus is coming to town. It's on ABC.
It actually left. I think Rudolph's never left the network, and neither. I guess Frosty hasn't either.
No.
But Santa Claus is Coming to Town did.
No,
it's it
always been on ABC.
Really?
Every year. Yeah.
It stayed.
Be thinking of the Year Without a Santa
Claus. Oh, Year Without a Santa Claus. That's right. That went to, but has that been brought back or no?
They brought it back to CBS one year while I've been the historian.
Right.
And then they just kind of put it on with the AMC marathons and the Freeform marathons and that's it. I mean, it's just as iconic as the others. So I have no idea why the networks would let that go.
Right.
Other than complete mismanagement and not knowing what's popular with their their customers.
You know, it's that's another crazy thing because I'm pretty sure these things, you know, all those other specials perform pretty well. Because I think Freeform, has Freeform changed now? I don't even know. Is it a new name now? Do they call it Form Free? Or
I don't even know. I don't watch it. All I know is like last year or the year before, they started airing Rudolph, Frosty, and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, not only on the networks, but on there too.
Yeah.
They never did that before.
No. Well, I guess it's performed very well, so
right.
I guess they feel like, well, we can keep it on the network and we can keep it here too, you know, and on the cable
eventually,
channel.
Eventually, it'll probably be streaming, which is
they'll have the Rankin Bass holiday, thing. The Rankin Bass holiday network,
right?
Just all be on there.
Eventually,
how many Christmas specials did they do? Rick.
It's in the teens, somewhere around 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it depends on what you count as a special.
Or as
they
a
did
movie.
Things like they did Cricket on the Hearth, which was a part of the Danny Thomas show.
You know, I've tried to watch that, and it's probably in one way I like it, but another way I'm not so fond of it. I like a lot of the Rankin Bass stuff. You know, I just saw, was it Hector? Is it Hector the? Oh, Nestor. Nestor, the Christmas donkey.
Yeah.
I just seen that for the first time and I really liked it. It was one of the later specials that they did, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it has a relationship to Bambi, obviously, with the mother dying.
Yes.
It's very sad, but it's also uplifting and somewhat religious, so I like it.
Yeah.
I like the music. I like the tone of it. I like the characters.
I couldn't believe how sad of a special it was, because when I saw it, I was like, holy I mean, I happen to like it a lot. It has a lot of heart to it.
Yeah. All of the Romeo Muller written Rankin Bass specials have that heart.
Right.
You know, there's no doubt about it. It's the type of heart that you do not see in, especially in modern entertainment. You don't see that at all.
No.
But even in their competitors of the day, you know, when you're talking about Hanna-Barbera and Chuck Jones and other animation studios, mm-hmm. they did Christmas specials, but they didn't quite have that kind of heart to them. So they haven't lasted
right
this long.
Yeah. Hanna-Barbera did a bunch of Christmas stuff.
Right.
But no, you're right about that.
Right.
They're very light. They're very light. And, you know, I think they were more interested, instead of, you know, pulling at the heartstrings, to just be as non-offensive as possible.
And, right. That's the thing I find with today's Christmas specials is they take the ingredients from Christmas and they put it in, you know, the Santa or whatever, but they don't write it with any kind of heart.
Yeah.
It's like decoration. It's not at the core. It's not really a Christmas special.
That's a big problem. That's because you're not connecting with your audience.
Right.
And
that's what Rankin Bass did. And not only that, if you look at the Rankin Bass specials, they had to get big stars that their voices would work with animation.
Mm-hmm.
Where today they get these stars and their voices don't work with animation.
No, I had Keith Scott on a couple of months back, and he was basically talking about that. He was saying, you know, and we were having a conversation where they're going for the marquee value of mm-hmm. an actor. And instead of finding the right actor to do the voice for the character.
The reason they went to Canada for Rudolph was the actor group that Bernard Cowan assembled were all radio actors. And radio lasted longer in Canada than it did here. When mm-hmm. I say radio, I mean doing stories on shows.
Right.
Where you have to visualize characters interacting with each other. So they had to, if there was a heavy set guy who was boisterous, they had to do that with their voice.
That's right. They had to create something that sounded heavy.
Right.
It's an art all its own, really.
So Larry Mann, who left Canada and came to the States and became a character actor that was in every TV show you can imagine in the 60s. Mm-hmm. He was the original voice of Sam the Snowman.
And
they knew he could do those kinds of characters because he did it in The Wizard of Oz. In fact, he did the witch's voice. A heavy set male doing the voice of a female witch.
Right.
He could do that.
Right.
So somebody, I think it was probably General Electric or NBC, said, we got to have a star in this, you know, for it to work.
Right.
So they deleted the Sam the Snowman dialogue from Larry. And they brought in Burl Ives, but Burl Ives had a wonderful voice.
Yes.
For Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And they just tweaked it a little bit and made it work for him. And then from every special on after that, they got Fred Astaire or Jimmy Durante or people who had really, really good voices
and
for animation.
And warm voices.
Right.
You know?
I mean, can bring that heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Mickey Rooney was a really good choice for Santa. Yeah. You know,
he had a very good animatable voice.
Mm-hmm. And they ended up using him a couple of times.
Right. Right.
They ended up using Danny Kaye, who actually was very good, but he did the Easter stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
He was not only the voice of Sassafras and Here Comes Peter Cottontail, but he was also Antoine the Caterpillar mm-hmm. and Colonel Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
he had all these voices, like from all the different characters that he would do in his movies.
Right.
So he was very talented in that way.
Right.
And Rankin Bass knew this. They knew they weren't just going to go get a star that had no, you know, inflections to the voice that would just be a stale voice.
Yes, exactly.
And then when they needed that now.
Well, when they needed real characters, they went to Paul Frees or Billy DeWolf did the he did the voice of the magician for Rankin Bass. Yeah,
Professor Hinkle.
That's right. And he just did that one. I don't think he did anything after that, correct?
Yeah.
Wow.
Arthur had a story to tell about him, you know, his flamboyancy and everything, but I don't recall exactly what it was. I think it was just that he was so over the top good for animation.
Yeah.
You know, he was perfect for that character.
Right.
And he really did make the special better by having him as like his nemesis.
Right.
Because he was so over the top goofy. That he really was an endearing character.
Rankin Bass did, okay, they did two Frosty specials, but did they do a feature film or no?
Well, Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July was a feature film in 79.
Right.
But it was issued for whatever reason, probably because of the distributor, in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, Christmas in July, and it didn't do well in the summer. And then it was cut together as a 90-minute special on ABC, and it did a lot better on television. So,
right.
You know, that's probably why there wasn't a big
right.
audience reception to it in the summer.
There's a lot of confusion with the there's okay, so you got Frosty the Snowman, and then you have the second Frosty, which was the one where he gets married, and I think that was Andy Griffith was the animated host, and then somebody produced Frosty Returns, which, you know, I think a lot of people were confused.
Yeah,
because it wasn't Rankin Bass, and yeah.
Frosty Returns apparently was done by Bill Melendez.
Yes.
But it looks nothing like the early Charlie Brown specials. And it's so pathetic that I couldn't watch more than a few minutes of it. And I was told the reason that they air it after Frosty is because the ratings are good on it. Initially people would tend to turn the channels at 7:30 to see what was on.
Right.
And for some reason they were tuning in to Frosty Returns, probably in amazement that it was even on a network television station, and the ratings were good.
Yeah.
So they keep showing the two of them together. Now Frosty's Winter Wonderland is truly the show they should be showing, but that was initially made for ABC,
right,
where Frosty was made for CBS, so it didn't have Karen and Hinkle and Hocus Pocus in it.
No, so, but it still has the, you know, Frosty, and it's still Jackie Vernon, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. So it goes together, and it should be together, but that's one of those things where they made a mistake and they never corrected it. No matter how many, I could talk about it on my blog until I'm blue in the face. I could write magazine articles about it, and everybody will know it, but the network.
Right. Well, maybe somebody should inform them. It's actually a very good special. The one, Frosty's Winter Wonderland.
Right. I like it.
I like
it's got Jack Frost in it.
Yeah.
By Paul Frees does the voice, and he's really good.
Yeah. Well, Paul Frees is excellent. What's your second favorite Rankin Bass special from the Christmas specials?
Every time I watch Santa Claus is Coming to Town,
mm-hmm.
it makes me proud to be a part of the history of Rankin Bass and to keep doing what I'm doing, because that special is so good.
Right.
From beginning to end.
The music, it's wonderful. It's really some of the best stuff they've done since Rudolph. Yeah.
But yeah. It also has this magical quality to it. The warlock wants to have one last magical thing happen.
Right, right.
You know, at the end. And it's just got a lot of heart to it. And Fred Astaire even says at the end, you know, some people don't understand Christmas, and you know, but doesn't it make it a little nicer to give gifts and love and all of that?
I think it's a great moment in the special because it's almost like his feelings on it. You know,
I mean, it transcends animation and TV specials and is something else. It's that magic that you want to capture at Christmas time. You want to get in that feeling and that mood of being in the moment of Christmas. And you can do that by watching some of these specials, which is not easy to create something like that.
No. No, it's not.
And then the Little Drummer Boy is like that too.
Little Drummer Boy is it's really a terrific special. I don't want to use the word wonderful. It's really terrific. It's another one of those, you know, they kill off the parents in here.
Right. And Baba almost dies too.
Yes.
But the Christ child brings him back to life. And it just shows you that, you know, if you believe in what Christmas is all about, basically, is what that special is about.
It's about giving.
It's something that, you know, we should be seeing more of in this day and age, but we're not, you know.
When I saw that special as a kid, I really loved the special. And right. It aired for a number of years, and then basically it wasn't on. It's almost like the network wanted to just take it off. I'm sure it was getting good ratings. I mean, I haven't been able to track it, but do you know about the history of that and how well it did and why they took it off?
I just wrote an article about the Little Drummer Boy for Retro Fan Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out in December. Issue 24, and obviously there's been a shift in taking religious programming or anything that involves religion in any way, shape, or form, and not putting it on primetime on the networks.
Right.
And that comes from who's running these networks, and it's not a good thing. so ratings to them are irrelevant if it doesn't fall into their narrative.
Right.
And so I don't have the actual rating, Nielsen ratings or anything like that from the Drummer Boy, but I know from the Rankin Bass ads they took out in Variety.
Yes.
That they all got high ratings consistently each year.
Yeah.
That's why they kept re-showing them and re-showing them. They were only supposed to be on for a few showings, period.
Right. Right. Two showings or maybe two or three.
Right.
And then that would be it. They would pull them off.
They really created that magic in a bottle, like you said, and just lived on. And to Arthur's amazement, because Arthur Rankin, his goal was to make feature films, and this is what he is known for and will be remembered for.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? Their television product is definitely, it's worked its way into the hearts of America, you know, and the world, and maybe the world. Anyway, Rick, you wrote an excellent book about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Tell our audience a little bit about that.
The Rudolph book is the making of, so it has all the different facets of what went into it, the animation in Japan. It has the original script, too, which changed quite a bit the one that they actually filmed, because there were talking seals and other characters in Romeo's earliest version of the script.
Right.
So it goes into all of the making of the special. And now, in 2022, we have some Blu-rays and DVDs coming out that are totally don't have the stamp of approval from Rankin Bass Productions. In fact, Arthur would be very, very angry if he knew what was going on today with his creations. And
yeah, it's sad.
Basically, they're packaging up the Warner Brothers, which is the later Rankin Bass specials, mm-hmm. and the early Rankin Bass specials, which are Universal now. And Universal has a history of putting out television shows and movies without any remastering.
Right.
I'm watching the TV series Emergency, and it's like that. It's just a direct transfer off the film, and that's it.
Yeah, and it's going to look muddy.
Right.
Grainy. Now, yeah, it's not going to.
Now, they're doing 4K Blu-rays, but the problem with that is the source material isn't high definition enough to even make 4K. So I don't know how they're going to do that. With Rudolph, and especially the little drummer boy, is they can't find the 35 millimeter. They've been issuing the 16 millimeter B-roll of right. the little drummer boy.
Wow.
So, in other words, everything that's coming out now, Rankin Bass, on DVD and Blu-ray, the one word I use to describe it is garbage. They did contact me. They hired probably the cheapest producer they could get on the West Coast to get supplemental material.
Right.
And to his credit, he bought my books, and he wanted to involve me and fly me out to do the commentary and all of that. But they got these people involved, again, that shouldn't be involved, that really don't have any say in what the material should be. And then they convinced them to not use me. And they got these people to do commentary that some of them aren't even fans.
Right.
That I know for a fact they don't like Rankin Bass.
Right.
They didn't even come over to my booth when I had Rudolph and Santa on display.
Wow.
And some of them are backstabbers that will only do it for the money.
Right.
And their ego. My goal is always has been to properly release the films, the specials to the fans in the best possible way they could be done. And so far, none of the studios, none of the big studios that take over these shows have done that. None of them have done that. And that's a shame.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's really, why put it out in just that for a cash grab when you could do a definitive version that could be out for eternity?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, makes sense, right? But that would mean spending a little bit more money, though. And
right.
Yeah.
You're right. That money is the big part of it, mm-hmm. but it's also that the companies aren't, I guess they're not smart enough to know who the expert is.
You know, I think you get one person that just says, you know, here's your budget, put it together. Don't do anything fantastic. Just, you know, we're just putting it out again. It sells fine by itself, you know.
Right.
Walt Disney used to believe that if you put the quality in, then basically it would pay for itself. And
right.
Maybe not then and there, but somewhere down the line, it would more than pay for itself.
Exactly.
And it's a good way of being. It's a good philosophy. And they should adopt that, especially for something like this. This is not – those specials are not throwaways. They are perennials. They are – they've been woven into the fabric of America, and they should be treated with the care. They should be treated well, and it will pay back. Yeah.
See, I have a large archives of Rankin Bass material here,
right?
That could be utilized in a video format. The only thing I could do is do what's in my control, and that's make the best books possible, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't skimp on anything in regards to all of my books. So Arthur Rankin trusted me with this, and that's all I can do is what's in my control. When these big companies do these idiotic things, and don't go for that definitive Walt Disney treatment. Mm-hmm. That's on them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's up to me to educate the fans that, you know, these aren't the good things that you think they are.
Right.
That's all I could do.
That's it. Yeah. Well, you're doing a great job. Your books, you have a book on Frosty the Snowman. You have a book on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, of course, is the Enchanted World of Rankin Bass Revised Edition.
And the making of Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Ah, there you go.
Daydreamer. The Arthur Rankin scrapbook, which we found his original scrapbook from the Dentsu Studios when he worked on Pinocchio.
Wow.
He put all the clippings in there and photographs he took on the set. That's all in that book and even more.
Wow.
So we've got some good books.
Well, you know, it's really, I've said this before, but, you know, there was like practically nothing in the 70s or 60s, as far back as I can remember, of any articles about Rankin Bass.
Right.
And with you, it's just like all the stuff is just overflowing. It's finally coming out. You are the man.
Yeah. And I kind of fell into it. It wasn't a planned thing. There was a reason for it. It's kind of like I'm the George Bailey of Rankin Bass, because
you wanted to be a musician. You wanted to be a musician, correct?
And an artist,
right?
Illustrator,
right?
But then I saw there was this void that nobody had even written anything about Rankin Bass, and to me, they're as big as Chuck Jones and Hanna-Barbera and Walt Disney and all the others. So,
oh, absolutely,
I just told Arthur, I'll do it, you know, and he was like, send me two chapters. So I did. He liked them. And then we just went from there. And I'm still doing it today. So,
well, you're doing Rankin Bass proud, I have to say. and all the fans out there that really love this stuff. Where can they get these books, Rick?
Well, at miserbros.com, and also in my Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/miserbros.
Miserbros, so MISERBROS.
Yep.
There
like
you go.
The heat miser and the snow miser.
There you go. If you're not sure about Forgot Miser Bros, you can always go to the Cartoonerific website. So you can go there and you can just you could click on the link there. I'll take you right there. So there you go.
Well, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas to you. I hope you have a wonderful holiday, Rick.
Same to you.
Thank you again. Really appreciate this.
Do you have any questions or comments about the podcast? Please email Brian at cartoonerific.com. Your email may be featured in one of our future shows.
Well, thank you once again, Rick Goldschmidt, and Merry Christmas to you, sir. So thank you for coming on the show and talking about those wonderful specials. I grew up on all that stuff. I have very fond memories of all those specials, Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Loved them all. I know a lot of people out there love them as well. Hey, we're just about out of time. What do you know? That's right. Anyway, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to our podcast. Go to your favorite service, click the subscribe button, and you'll be notified every time a Cartoonerific podcast is uploaded for your enjoyment. Also, if you really like what you're listening to, please, please tell a friend about us. We need you to. I need you to. So please do so. Thank you. Anyway, the company store is up and operating, and the Animation Art Gallery is also up and operating. You can access those two things from our Cartoonerific website. That's Cartoonerific.com. Go there, and you can buy some wonderful swag or original animation art from us, and it helps the show. All helps us. Anyway, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. I hope your holiday is a special one. Thank you once again for tuning in.
This has been a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
The Cartoonerific podcast is copyright 2024 by Cartoonerific Studios Incorporated. All rights reserved.